The first thing I think when I arrive at Paul Manley's campaign office on Bowen Road is it's 11 in the morning, in the middle of the week. Why would the door be locked? And then...
Oh my god, I'm an idiot. Thank you. Does it actually say Paul on there? Hang on, let me I have to know now. Okay, in my defense, it doesn't actually say pull or push. All right, I'm Todd.
Oh, Todd Nathan.
Yeah.
Himself.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for doing this.
And we start.
He just got in on your
with his parents.
Yeah. Well, my father was a labor organizer, and then he became a United Church minister. My parents met at a university conference. My mom grew up in Alberta. She's Danish, and first generation born in the country. Her parents immigrated to Canada. My father's family, some of them go back in Canada a long time. So yeah, my dad was a logger and then a minister, and he was a minister up at Camp Wass on Vancouver Island, and women weren't allowed in the camp. So when he and my mom got married in 1959, his first calling was at Kitimat Village in the Haisla community there. And that was before there was a road in, and you used to have to take the boat across to the town site. That's when my folks really started to get connected with Indigenous people and start to understand more deeply the history of Indigenous people in this country.
Do you have siblings? Or?
I do.
Okay, were you first born, or where were you in the
I'm second. My oldest brother was born in Kitimat, and I was second born. I was born in Port Ellis on Vancouver Island when my dad was working at the pulp mill there. And we moved to Port McNeil and then to Prince Rupert, where my dad was a minister as well.
How old were you when you moved?
I think a year old. I think of Port McNeil, maybe I was 2 or 3 years old. I went to kindergarten and grade one in Prince Rupert. And I have a sister who's a year younger than me, and she's Haisla. So she was adopted in an open adoption.
What do you mean by that?
Well, everybody knew except the kids. So we had family friends who would come and visit us and teach us about their culture. We knew that she was adopted, but we didn't know that all these family friends were actually her biological family.
Oh.
Yeah. And when we were teenagers, we figured out that Granny Irene was my sister's biological grandmother, and Auntie Vi was my sister's biological mother. And Auntie Vi, Vina Starr, was the first female Aboriginal lawyer called to the bar in British Columbia. Mm. Yeah. And so my sister's just finished 25 years of working for the Ontario Provincial Police, and she just got a law degree practicing Aboriginal law now. And I have a younger brother. He's 6 years younger.
What's his name?
Mark. He lives in Mexico City.
Oh, why?
He runs the UNHCR head office there.
Oh, okay.
So he deals with all the refugees flowing across the border.
And at what point did your father get into more political aspirations?
He ran in 1969 for the BC NDP and wasn't successful. So he ran again in 1979, the year that Joe Clark won, and didn't get elected. It was a Conservative that was elected. And then he ran again in 1980 and was successful. So that was Tommy Douglas's old riding. On my 16th birthday, I was out door knocking with Tommy Douglas and going to events and spent my 16th birthday dinner with him. I knew that he was an important guy. I didn't know that he was as important as he was. And at the time, I was thinking, I should be hanging out with my girlfriend and my friends. 16th birthday, this guy's got great stories, but really.
What kind of kid were you?
I was an adventurous kid. You know, I love to be out in the wilderness, so... when we moved to Ladysmith, I started hiking up to Heart Lake at an early age. 9 years old, I would go up there and camp with my friends. We would disappear for the weekend. We didn't have tents. We would take a sheet of plastic and build ourselves shelters and just go and explore, go all the way up Holland Creek. We built a cabin up that way. But I remember...
Wait a minute, you and your friends or yeah. Your family?
My friends. My parents didn't go camping with me, no.
Oh.
Yeah, me and my older brother.
How old were you when you were friends and you built a cabin?
Around 11, 12 years old.
What?
Yeah.
Is this a treehouse fort or like...
Well, it was more like a pretty rustic dirt floor kind of cabin.
Is it still there?
Oh, I'm sure that there's some rotting logs in a pile somewhere.
You haven't been back to check?
No, I haven't.
Really?
I don't know if I could find it, actually. Okay. It was like, you know, we had a kind of a gold miner's trail to find the thing. I bought my first boat when I was 11. And I would tootle around all the Gulf Islands. I would disappear for the weekend.
Okay, wait, sir, stop. How does an 11-year-old purchase a motor craft?
With a paper route. I just saved up my paper route money. I bought a boat for $50, and I bought a motor for, I think, $75, and my friend's dad was good at fixing stuff. But
and what did you do with the boat?
We would go and camp on the Southern Gulf Islands. We would take off to like Tent Island and Galliano and Valdez. And
we being who?
Me and my friends. Yeah, when we were 11, 12, 13 years old. Back in those days, you know, kids would disappear for the weekend and parents wouldn't stress it, right? By the time I was 16, I had 3 boats.
When Paul Manley was 16, his father moved the family to Ottawa.
16 seems like a tough age to move to an entirely new city, province.
It was. Yeah, it was a difficult time to move. My first year in Ottawa, I went to Tech, Ottawa Technical High School, and quickly realized that it was kind of the last resort for students that had been kicked out of the district everywhere else. And so when I went to Tech, I would go watch my dad in question period. You know, when I had a break, I would go by the House of Commons, watch my dad in question period, or, you know, drop by the cafeteria for lunch because super cheap.
How old were you when he left federal politics?
24.
And what were you doing at that point?
I went to school at Humber College and studied jazz for a year. Then I went into computer engineering, and eventually I settled on broadcasting, and I finished a diploma in broadcasting.
How does someone go from jazz, Paul, to computer engineering?
Left brain, right brain, I don't know. I was looking at ways to change the world, and music didn't seem like it was rock and roll wasn't going to change the world.
But computer engineering was?
Well, computer engineering, like, you can see now the way computers and apps have really changed a lot of things and, you know, in the way that we live and how we do things. And so maybe that's what I should have stuck with. But my mom got into filmmaking. So in Ottawa, she went back to school to get a master's degree in fine arts, and she started to dabble in video, and then she started doing documentaries. And then I joined the Saw Video Collective in Ottawa and started doing videos there, and then started to volunteer at Sunshine Cable, which is I guess it's Rogers there now or something. And then I went into broadcasting and finished broadcasting diploma, and then moved back out to BC. And my time in exile was over.
How old were you when you moved back?
27? 26. I've been married twice. The first time I got married was in 1989. And I have a 31-year-old daughter from that relationship. I met her when she was 3, but she's been calling me dad for a long time now. And she has a daughter, so I'm a grandfather. My granddaughter is 3 years old.
And where does she live?
My daughter and granddaughter live down in Cowichan Bay.
Do you have a good relationship with them?
Well, I have a great relationship with them, yeah. Really good. I had split up with my wife, and my current wife Samantha was in Indonesia traveling around for a year, and she came back, and we were just hanging out as friends, and yeah, just kind of went, well, we're both single, and we actually really get along with each other and have a lot in common. So, and we got married in 2004. So, you know, we did everything else. We had a child. We bought a house. We built a fence, got a dog, and then we decided to have a community celebration. So we got married on Sombrio Beach. Well, it was my mother that inspired me to get into filmmaking, and she was making films about human rights issues. Once I finished broadcasting, I moved back out here. I started working on projects with with my mother. And the first documentary we did together was a historic documentary about residential school systems. And it was based on a woman who worked at a residential school. She was a whistleblower.
The slightest mistake on the part of the boys brought down the wrath of the authorities, and the severe floggings, which were the almost inevitable consequences of wrongdoing, seemed to me in many cases to be out of all proportion to the gravity of the offense.
I did some films with my parents down in Central America. All my films tend to be things that I have a passion about.
It would strike me there's not a lot of money in documentary filmmaking about environmental issues.
There's not.
So how did you support your family?
I did television work in Vancouver. I was the co-producer of the first preschool show on APTN, and then I worked in post-production on 64 episodes of a preschool show on APTN, and then did a teen show, and then I did a lot of lifestyle programming before everything went reality TV, and then I would work on my own projects on the side. My wife's always had a solid job, so...
What does she do?
Right now, she's the executive director at Literacy Central Vancouver Island. And before that, she was the settlement manager for the Multicultural Society, working with all the Syrian refugees that came to Nanaimo.
So it's 2015, you're making documentaries, and then you run for office.
Yeah. When Jean Crowder resigned her seat here, I thought I would seek the nomination for the NDP, and they wouldn't let me run. So
who wouldn't let you run?
The NDP. Well, my parents have been involved in human rights issues for all my life. They started to turn their attention to Israel and Palestine, and my father was on a boat to Gaza with members of parliament from around the world, and he was seized illegally in international waters.
The ship carrying pro-Palestinian activists bound for Gaza is being boarded.
The former MP from Nanaimo spent 3 days in an Israeli jail, an experience...
All the other countries had their governments speak up for their people who were in detention, and they were all released fairly quickly. My dad was held incommunicado for 5 days, and nobody in Canada would speak for him. The conservative member of parliament said my father could rot in prison for all he cared.
But how did that affect your nomination?
I asked my member of parliament if she was going to speak up for my father because it's a federal issue, and she said she wasn't allowed to. I should speak to the critic for foreign affairs, and he ignored me. So I wrote a letter to the NDP caucus and asked them, you know, what was up? How come this elder statesman of the party was sitting in a detention center in Israel and nobody was speaking for him? And that letter was leaked to the media, and the next day Peter O'Neill asked me if it was my letter, and I said, yes, it is. And so it became a front page news story. And a few days later, my father was finally released.
Jim Manley is finally back on Canadian soil after being held in an Israeli jail. He was on board the Estelle.
2 years after that, I was seeking the nomination for the NDP, and the local NDP vetted me as a candidate, and I didn't pass the vet in head office in Ottawa because of the things that I said.
How do you know that was the reason? Did they explicitly say that was the reason?
Yeah, they told me that on the phone. They wouldn't put it in writing. You know, I was doing what any son would do, is defend their father when they're in that kind of situation, and being blocked by the NDP was pretty painful. Elizabeth May phoned me up right away and asked me if I'd run, and I said no. She asked me, I think, 4 more times, and I said no and no and no. And then she hired me to go across Canada to document the green train from Vancouver to New Brunswick going to their conference. And so I hopped on the train and I did interviews. And she asked me several months after that if I would consider running, and I said, sure.
Looking back, do you not think that hiring you to document all of that was actually cleverly disguised method of recruiting you?
Oh, definitely a cleverly disguised measure. Yeah, she was working me.
We are forecasting at this moment now a Liberal government, the Liberals attaining the majority status. They're well above the crowd reacting in Montreal at Liberal Party headquarters.
In 2015, Paul Manley ran for the first time with the Greens. The NDP's Sheila Malcolmson won Nanaimo Ladysmith that election with a 33% share of the vote. Paul Manley came in fourth place with about 20%.
We were disappointed with the result at that point, and I wasn't sure if I was going to run again. A lot of people told me after the 2015 election that they really wanted to support me, but at the last minute they just couldn't because they were worried about splitting the vote or strategic voting, and they were worried about Harper getting reelected. And
did that shift your strategy for this year's by-election?
For sure.
It is a green victory in Nanaimo. That party secures a win in the federal by-election before the general vote this fall.
The next morning, my campaign manager phoned me up at 5 to 7. He goes, are you awake? I said, I'm awake now. He goes, good, because at 10 after 7, you have your first interview. At 20 after 7, you have another interview, and then you need to
get... Great. Listen, Mr. Manley, first of all, congratulations to you. Going from fourth to first is an impressive accomplishment. Why do you think the voters took to your message this time?
Well, last time I ran, we had the closest four-way race in Canada, and after the election...
Paul Manley was elected on a Monday. By Friday, he was in Ottawa.
So after a general election, there's an orientation for all the MPs, and they go through and they get their training on, you know, managing your budget and hiring your staff and how the parliament works and what you can do and what you can't do. But for me, it was a one-on-one session in a boardroom. And so I had a staff person that was assigned to me. She set up the schedule, and I would just meet her, and there would be people there to teach me about the budget, my financial budget, running my office, hiring staff. And then somebody would come in and talk to me about HR, and then somebody else would come in and talk to me about parliamentary protocol, and then somebody else would come in and talk to me about the process of creating private members' bills and the legislative process and everything else.
And have you been to your actual MP office yet at this point?
No.
Oh.
So the first 10 days...
Did you even know where it was?
I knew where it was going to be. And then on May 27th, I was sworn in. Elizabeth May reads this announcement to the Speaker.
It is my distinct honor to present to you Paul Manley, member for Nanaimo Ladysmith. He has sworn the oath, signed the roll, and now claims the right, the privilege, and the honor to take his seat.
Member, take his seat.
At any point during this, does the Prime Minister... Like, what was the first time you heard from the Prime Minister or met the Prime Minister?
I haven't met the Prime Minister.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you spoken to him at all?
No.
Oh, that surprises me. I would have thought that when you win the election, or that when you arrive in Ottawa in a by-election, that there's like a call from the Prime Minister.
No.
Have you heard from any of the other party leaders, the Conservative or the NDP leader yet?
No.
Are you bilingual, by the way?
No.
How's that going?
Well, I understand little bits of French from my, you know, I took French up to grade 10 in BC, and then when I moved to Ottawa, they said, you're at about grade 2 level, so you're not going to carry on in the high school system here.
Are you going into French immersion type things?
I'm
going
to do that, yeah. I haven't done that yet.
If you don't win,
yep.
What happens with Paul Manley?
I carry on, you know. If I don't win, I go back to things I've been doing before, which is working for this community, in one way or another. I'll I don't know if I'll go back, you know, to full-time filmmaking. I'll probably more than likely find myself a job doing something that serves the community and make films on the side as passion projects.
And if you do win, how long would you like to have the job?
I've got a good decade and a half of work in me left, whether it's in Parliament or whether it's doing other things. You know, I'm kind of like my parents. I don't really see retirement as retirement. I'm really dedicated to the next generation, my daughters and my granddaughter. Like, I love sailing, obviously. I had my first boat when I was 11. I could just sail off into the sunset, but that doesn't feel right to me. You know, I feel like I owe the next generation and the generation after that, I owe them a commitment of time and energy. And so whatever happens, I'm going to carry on.
Your volunteers have been filing in behind us while we're talking, so I think I should let you go. Thank you for doing this.
All right, thank you.
Good luck.
All right, thanks.
Paul Manley is running as the Green candidate for Nanaimo Ladysmith. For the record, I did reach out to the federal NDP for their comment on Mr. Manley's claim that he was denied candidacy because of a letter he wrote regarding his father's treatment in Israel. The NDP did not return my emails. Next time on The Candidates.
I will never forget the day, but it is probably the worst feeling you could ever have as a human to see your child die. Right? Getting through that intact was probably the most difficult thing I've done. And yeah, that was a pretty dark period.